Blog Talk Radio.
If we don't talk about that stuff, Glenn, if we don't tell people,
sure.
And you and I have said this for years, it's, in fact, let's go back just for a second. When,
sure.
when we mentioned last show, that we did the program Tradition a couple of times at FDIC, and we had a great time with that. Glenn, what was your thought? Why did you want to do that program in the first place? What was the mission or the goal of that program, if you will?
Well, I think, it was becoming apparent that, things are changing in the fire service, and especially we talked about things disappearing from our midst, if it's the, as you say, if it's the box alarm or the two-piece companies and things like that. We talked about last week. There was something was, there's a change taking place in the fire service, and we realized that especially nowadays we're getting a lot more people coming into the fire service that perhaps don't have relative that was in the fire service before, so they don't really know from whence they came, from where, what organization they've joined, what is the background of this whole thing, what's the history of it, and especially what are the traditions that we carry on for many, many years. And that's, something that we felt that, was critically important for people to really, get part of that pride and ownership that you've talked about and, in the fire service and know, what is our background? Where do we, as I say, where do we come from? And so we felt that, this is a great time to put it out there as something that, you and I have felt that for a long time that's perhaps missing from a lot of our probie academies, firefighter training academies, is that historical component, to give the new firefighters really a good grounding in their heritage and the people that have come before them and why we do things a certain way, why are things done in a certain manner. And, of course, tradition also is the glue that, to some extent, creates the brotherhood itself. So that's that in essence, that's really why this is kind of where another fork in the road for the fire service. And I think this is something where we've got to kind of set this as a foundation to build upon.
And Glenn, you being the educator that you are at John Jay and everywhere else you teach all over the country, and what you do, you've done for years with the magazine and the shows. It is frustrating. You're right. When you go places, and young firefighters will tell you that, the chief doesn't care about, he doesn't understand what we're all about. And you go, well, tell me, what are you all about? When did you get your first motorized piece of apparatus? When did this? Tell me about your – and they can't tell you. And then you go to the academies, like you said, and they kind of breeze through the history in the fire service. The orientate, well, there was a steam pumper, and they had fire plugs. Okay, next we're going to move on to, and it was frustrating because I thought people were just kind of bored with it. And then I realized the guys that were teaching it, the men and women that were teaching it, the reason they were breezing through it is because no one ever took the time to sit down with them and explain about everything we did. And I know one of the things that I'm going to get to this right now. I know one of the things that ticks you off every time we talk about traditions of the fire service and the history, the whole fire mark thing. And the fact that, Glenn, if my house didn't have a certain company's insurance mark on it, that those volunteers would sit there and let my house burn to the ground, man. And depending on the fire mark you had, I won't say where, but it's even printed in some textbooks out there. And I know that's been a pet peeve of yours. So let's set the record straight right here, brother.
Yeah.
Well,
it is to some extent a footnote in history, but the funny thing is the things that we carry forward. And you're right. There's some of the new firefighter training manuals, basic firefighter one handbooks, talk about the fire mark. And the fire mark basically is typically metal, though there are the earliest ones are made of wood and metal. Basically insignia of different insurance companies in the 18th and 19th century that were put on people's homes and dwellings and what have you to indicate, that this particular building was insured. And what's happened over the years is that there's sort of this mythology that's grown up around these fire marks that You know, basically, if your particular home, let's say, and these are very prevalent in Philadelphia and Baltimore and to some extent St. Louis, but if your home in Philadelphia on Walnut Street, you know, had the green tree fire mark on it, that, you know, certain fire companies would not, you know, would not, if there was a fire in your home, they would not put the fire out because it wasn't, quote, their company, basically. You know, probably this myth has its origins in the European, specifically the UK and London, because after the Great Fire 1666, there were a lot of insurance industry was turned upside down back then in London, and basically the fire brigades were actually created by the insurance companies, which again was, you know, a response to the gigantic fire. U.S. our fire companies were never really tied directly to insurance companies. There is evidence that, you know, that you know, the green tree or the Philadelphia contributorship or whatever fire mark representing whichever particular company was on a home or a building, that there was some evidence that they would perhaps give donations to local companies at the end of the year and things like that. But there was never that we could ever find any reference in the contemporary newspapers, or whatever, back then, that, you know, that a fire company would refuse to put out a fire in you know, a particular building because of you know, because it wasn't their company. Because again, these fire marks, these insurance company marks, were really just more advertising than anything else. You know,
and not everybody had them, right, Glenn? I mean,
no, you didn't have to have them. You didn't have them by law, and you know, not every building had them. So that's why I say this craziness of you know, thinking that, oh gee, the Union Fire Company or the Wekakoa Hose or whoever would look at this particular building and know that, oh gee, it's got this mark on it, we're not going to put the fire, that's a bunch of baloney. And unfortunately, it's been perpetuated through the years, and as I say, it's in current, essentially brand new Firefighter One textbooks out there today. Now, I do have to say, and I won't use this too much of a commercial, but Fire Engineering is producing a brand new handbook for Firefighter 1 and Firefighter 2 training. And actually, I'm serving as the editor of the book, and one of the most important, you know, not the most important thing, but an important thing that I wanted to do was, you know, certainly was to get the historical stuff out there. Certainly the most important thing was to really get the best authors out there and the best information to the new firefighters. But I did select a guy by the name of Don Cannon for the chapter that we have on the history, and it's a great one. I've already finished editing it, and it's a wonderful chapter, and really gives a really good, gigantic slice of meat to new firefighters about what their history is, and from a whole bunch of different angles. But I could tell you that we've corrected that myth in that chapter. Don, by the way, Don, for those of you who are looking for books, and I know, Rick, you mentioned earlier, Romance of Firefighting, Fire in America, those books, you know, have been around for several years, and they are probably the top ones to really get guys into understanding our history and things. And another one I want to add to that list is called The Heritage of Flames, which it was produced in 1977 by the same author, Don Cannon, and it's a wonderful history of the American Fire Service right up to the American Revolution. He'd always intended on doing more volumes, and he and I have actually talked about that, of continuing that.
And Glenn, that's called The Heritage of Flames?
Yeah, Heritage of Flames.
By Don Cannon?
Don Cannon, C-A, yeah, like the military device, C-A-N-N-O-N.
And I can look for that on
yes,
the website.
Yes, matter of fact, you guys are looking for old fire books. A great place to look is, I think you mentioned last week, Rick, was Abe, A-B-E, as a link, just www.abe.com. Is American
but,
Book.
But don't do it till I have a chance to order this one.
Okay. I think
everybody
there's enough
needs
copies
to wait till Lasky gets one. Okay.
And by the way, some of these books, I mean, Eric, you know, some of these books are really pennies on the dollar. I mean, you can still get them for under $10. So,
well, it depends. Yeah, you know. I saw that. Depending, Glenn, on the shape you want them in.
Right, right. If you're just looking for fun and reading, then
I paid more to ship Fire in America than I did, and it came. I had a library card from the Port Library, and for three, I think it was $3.94
right,
the whole book, and it's incredible.
Right.
It's absolutely incredible. Now, you know, and some of the artwork, I know we've talked about that before.
Yeah.
It's just amazing when you see some of the artwork on the fire marks and some of the, you know, the artwork on those front pieces, and that's why you've got to go to these museums. We mentioned Aurora in Illinois and Dallas and Texas and the FDNY and all these different museums all over the country. And when you have a chance to really go and look, and I know, you know, for years that's been your one of your pet peeves is you know, not only we talked last time about they're not bugles, they're trumpets. And, you know, I give in a little bit as long as they know, like I said before, they don't play music. But a lot of folks, I had a couple of guys come up to me after listening to that, going, well, I kind of feel bad. I've always referred to them as bugles. Well, they're really not, and that's why those badges have what they have on them. And the leather bucket thing, let's talk about that for a little bit. And there was a term you and I talked about before going on the air today with Bobby, and we'll get to that in a second. But the whole bucket thing, you kind of run us through that with the whole, you know, everybody sees the buckets, they see pictures, but sure, how that process worked when the alarm, when, you know, when someone rang the bell,
right,
or someone shouted that there was a fire,
right,
you know, what happened then?
Well, especially, you know, if you think about it, you know, pre-fire company days even, I mean, there were some fires, as long as there have been buildings, there have been fires, certainly. And our earliest, you know, fire protection methods were typically in the form of leather buckets, you know. Basically, each homeowner was required to provide two of them. You know, businesses and larger establishments have to have more, but essentially, it was the responsibility at that time for firefighting. Again, especially in the earliest days of when fire companies were first starting to be organized. You know, prior to that, it was basically everyone's responsibility for firefighting. So they would, you know, when there was a fire, they, you know, basically, you know, run through the town telling people where the fire was, to bring out your buckets, and of course each family would go to wherever the fire was and would essentially create that proverbial bucket brigade.
Wouldn't they sometimes yell, throw out your buckets, and
right,
if the man of the house wasn't home back then, you know, whoever was going to do it, people would throw their buckets into
right,
the street, they'd be scooped up and ran down
right
to the, okay.
Right, and then the unique thing about the buckets are that, and, you know, we talk about folk art, and unfortunately, being a fire, you know, an amateur fire historian and collector and stuff, the folk art people have kind of consumed our collecting, because these things are really so beautiful that they're looked at more from the folk art standpoint than they are from the firefighting standpoint. But these buckets, just like the helmet fronts we talked about and some of the other things, were done up, you know, in some cases fairly simplistic, just a person's name painted on the bucket, but there's a lot of them out there that have unbelievable artistic expressions on them, you know, in terms of fire scenes or, you know, hand in hand or whatever. And, you know, just, you know, with the names, for example, the not only the person's, you know, the individual's name on it, but date typically when it was made. And so these are, you know, this is, and of course, it was a utility aspect to this as well, because once the fire was out, we had to figure out whose buckets belonged to who. And so if your name is on them, they obviously could be returned.
And Glenn, one other thing, didn't they often, in a lot of communities, after that was done, they would actually, you know, announce, you know, yell, scream, whatever they're going to do, shout, that, you know, they would, all the buckets could be picked up at like one
right
spot. You know, they
right
would, you could come back and get your bucket from that spot.
Right, right. And that, and so this way you knew who belonged to who, basically.
And
know?
Glenn, one more thing, and this is kind of fun, because this is
yeah
another one of those, we talked about the terminology,
yeah,
you know, runs, and we talked about
sure
that. A lot of young firefighters say, I had 10 runs yesterday or whatever, and we talked about where that came from way
right
back when. There's another term out there that, let's say, Rick Lasky is in his suit and tie, and he's walking down the other side of the street when, you know, someone's got a line going with the bucket brigades, and I decide that what I've got to do is a little bit too busy and too important to stop and join in
right
with the bucket brigade. What, is there anything that would happen at that point?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things that would happen. One is that you probably get a lot of bad looks, basically, but they might go over and grab you and throw you into the line, because it was a legal responsibility back then, too. I mean, it was, you know, we think about firefighting today, and we can talk about this on another program and everything, but, you know, we've, unfortunately, in the United States, we, you know, and we're probably a victim of this as well, we've kind of fallen into this, you know, woe is me kind of thing when it comes to fires, that, you know, this is, you know, something that, you know, if I have a fire in my home, that it's not my responsibility at all, and that kind of thing. And, but back then, you know, 200 years ago, you know, things were a lot different, and you not only had responsibility of not having a fire start in your home, but you also had a responsibility, when one did break out, that you would have to, participate in putting it out, basically. And so if Rick Lasky was walking down the street, besides getting the bad glances and things like that, he might be just drawn right in and be yelled at and called a slacker, what
and
have you. So,
there you go. The term slack, yeah, you were deemed a slacker.
Right.
We talk about slackers, and if I, you know, oh, he's a slacker, she's a slacker, you know, they don't do their,
right.
you know, pull their end. I mean, and you could actually, Glenn, they could fine you if you had a fireplace or a fire that started in your chimney.
Yep.
They could fine you for not taking care of those things. And
yeah, think about that in today's terms, right? I mean, we tend to fire is a different animal today, and I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that you know, insurance exists and things like that, because we don't have an 18th or 19th century mentality about fire, which was back in that period of time was much more of a threat, for example, than crime or anything else. So people respected fire, you know, and there were a lot of what we would consider to be unusual laws today that held people accountable for having fires, but that's not the way we are today. But I just want to throw up one other thing too, another term here. We talk about hooking ladders, for example.
Yeah.
You know, one of the earliest methods of firefighting, besides the buckets, which obviously, as everyone can think about, is pretty ineffective. It lets the fire be relatively small, but it's what all they had basically, because it wasn't until Boston imported its first engine, I believe, in the 1680s or 1690s. I'm not sure. I have to look. That one, their first engine didn't have wheels on it. It had to be picked up to the fire.
You're kidding me.
Now, New York got its first two engines in 1731. So, but there was still things going on before then, you know. And so we were relying on those buckets. But one of the terms, we talk about hook and ladder. You know, ladders have been around the fire service also from the very beginning, and still have the hooks. Now, the hooks that we think about today are, you know, a pipe pole or something along those lines, or anything for opening ceilings or whatever. They really have their origins in a much longer hook and much larger hook that were actually used to pull buildings down, basically, to create fire breaks.
And they did that. I read they did that in Jamestown.
Right.
And they were whaling hooks.
Right.
Before they were pipe poles that
right.
they used to whale. Yeah. I mean, they
right.
were doing exposure control way back then.
Right. And the ladders that they used back then, because they would try to protect the exposures. They would try to pull either the fire building down, or more often pull adjacent buildings down and create these fire breaks. But the ladders themselves also were important at those beginning days to get up on roofs and try to extinguish roof fires and things along those lines. But what's funny about it is that those ladders also didn't come on a ladder truck. They were carried by hand. So there were ladders in buildings. They'd have, just like you'd have one in your garage, you'd have to go up and basically grab the ladder off the rack and run to it, run to the fire with the ladder on their shoulder. So we've come a long way, Rick.
We've come a long way. Yeah, when the guys are riding the ladder truck that just cost them like, you know, $800,000-$900,000, they don't have to carry.
They don't have to carry the ladders anymore.
Well, and I know we're bouncing around all over
right.
the place, but this
right.
is, I just love this stuff, Glenn. You know, you mentioned, the knob before, you know, whoever was in the knob last show about, you know, with the end of the pipe, you know, that kind
right.
of thing. It was the nozzle, man, I guess. If
right,
you
the leader,
it.
You know, being the hose itself, you know. A lot of times they were called leader hose and stuff, which were really the first engines that had, the leather hose we talked about last week, of course, were on small reels and on top of the engine. And it was usually only about 100, 150 feet, and that was about it. So you couldn't go very far for it. That's, of course, we talked about hose companies that were created in 1803, and Philadelphia was the first hose company that brought larger quantities of hose to the fire. So,
and those hose companies, that was not, you know, I know we talked last show about
right.
you had the engine. If you look at the pictures, you would see maybe a couple lengths of some suction hose.
Right, and especially on the steamers later on, that the steamers only carried the suction hose. That was it. There was no attack lines on that steamer.
You had to get the hose to,
exactly.
you know. And I mean, I was at a department years ago where the rig came back from being in the shops, and they had taken all the brass off it so it wouldn't get stolen. And the guy's a little bit too busy, a shift change, to make sure. We went to a fire, and we ended up with nothing on the ends. I said, unless you can put your thumb over the end of that, are we trying to be like the old days where we're waiting for the rest of the stuff to get here
right.
on another rig?
Right.
But and we mentioned, I mean, we talked about, you know, workers, working fires before we mentioned, you know, workers. And and we actually use that term here, Glenn, if on a one alarm, you know, the first arriving companies get a report of a structure fire.
Right.
They deem it a working fire. They say working fire, and that's like the 1075 in New York. That gets us,
right,
you know, duty chief to the scene, maybe another company and all that.
Sure.
And I know John, I mean, I love when I'm in the Bronx with John, they still, you know, he'll tell the companies, go ahead and take up.
Right.
And those types of terminology.
Right.
But you mentioned, we were talking about the little hard suction on the steam, the steamers. Talk about the fire plug for a second. I know we mentioned hydrants before when they first came around, but the term, like here, our medics will pull up, our ambulances will pull up, they'll spot and they'll say, I got a red top plug over here, a fire plug in that. And get into that just a little bit here.
The theory is that we use the word fire plug today because, you know, in the early 19th century, you know, water in cities became a big issue, you know, for a lot of reasons. But fire protection was one of the most important ones. And so, you know, they essentially were, in those days, especially in New York, created private companies, one of them being the Manhattan Water Company, which was actually created really for all intents and purposes by its originators. They wanted to create a bank, and the state of New York would not allow them to create a bank, so they created a water company, which essentially became a bank. And that Manhattan Water Company really didn't do a heck of a lot of work, I mean, as far as water goes. But the funny thing about that Manhattan Water Company eventually became part of Chase Manhattan Bank that we know today, basically, in New York. It has its origins as a water company, basically. And, but those early water companies, what they did provide was, you know, hand-hewn logs, basically, tree trunks, which were hollowed out in the center and joined together with pitch, and basically laid in the streets, and were connected typically to an elevated tank. And that was essentially your water supply for firefighting. And the word plug, theoretically, and again, there's not a lot of this written up in the contemporary journals of that time period, but it's believed that what happened was, especially before the hydrant, a hydrant that we would consider, you know, like we know about today and everything, before those were created, they actually, the firefighters would actually, you know, find these logs basically buried in the ground. They would drill down into the log. Of course, water would come out. And basically, they would be able to drop their suction hose into this growing pool of water on the ground, basically, to be able to draw water out of it, and of course, then light the fire. So the thought is that once the fire was out, that they had to stop the water from flowing, so they have a piece of wood that they would jam in there, i.e. a plug, basically, to plug the flow of water and stuff. And that's where the term came from. But
one of the things that I've told Kenny Gabriel, the chief up in Coeur d'Alene, my buddy and my brother, I said, if you ever want to get me, you know, an incredible Christmas present, you got to go into your water department director's office, and you need to ask him that he needs to let go of that. He's got a piece of a wooden main with the metal banding around it, the wire, with two plugs in it. It's all, you know, shellacked up and everything, but I'm like, oh, there it is. I mean,
they still dig up from time to time, even in New York, you know, digging up in Lower Manhattan, they'll still dig up these old tree trunks. And, you know, Philadelphia, the same thing, because that was, you know, before you had cast iron, I mean, it was the next material of choice, basically, for water supply. Before you had the cast iron, they were using wood, you know, and that's where the plugs came into play. The first hydrant, I believe, was in 1807, if I'm not mistaken, right there with New York. It didn't look exactly like today's hydrant, but in essence, it performed the same function.
Well, and Glennie, I know, like I said, we keep bouncing around. We talked once before about leather lungs, but you mentioned back in London, and I know you've talked about this before. I believe it was during World War II, where they had so many firefighters they had a hard time recruiting because of how many were killed during, you know, they were losing just firefighter after firefighter with the bombings and the fires and everything. Is there a reference that people, is there anything out there that they can look up and try to buy, or is there a book that was written about that period or that time?
Well,
or?
There's a new one, and unfortunately Ricky caught me on this one because I don't remember the name of it, but there's a brand new book about the first day of the Blitz in London. It's on the bookshelves right now. I mean, it's only been out for a few weeks. So if you go to local Borders or Barnes and Noble, and I wish I remember the name of it at this point.
Well, I've got a Barnes and Noble gift card that my son got.
Okay, well there's one, and it's literally a whole book written about the first night of the Blitz in London. And of course, there's a big section there about the firefighting because this was an aerial assault on London by German German aircraft, basically, and set innumerable fires throughout London, basically, and it was just a siege, basically, onto their city. And of course, the fire service became an important part of that. And if you look at the role that firefighters have played in wars, basically, I mean, you look at the situation at Hickam Air Force Base in Pearl Harbor, and there's a whole history of the firefighters who were injured and killed, basically, as a result of the Japanese attack in 1941. I wish Rick I had read this before it went on today, but there's a, I'm sure someone in Hawaii will know this exactly, and I'm probably wrong about this, but they, some of their firefighters were given awards by Congress, basically, for, essentially military type awards given to civilian firefighters because of their performance on them